Track 6. This is Brian Gall back at the Sports Desk to bring you the latest news. With soccer and rugby taking a rest for the next 3 or 4 months, let's begin this time with the local cricket news. There was no joy for followers of Pedmore or Hagley in the First Division of the Worcestershire County League. Both were thoroughly trounced in Saturday's matches. Pedmore were bowled for 135 in just 37 overs, replying to Feckenham's 206, while Hagley, facing an overwhelming total of 321/5 scored by Bewdley, gave up the ghost and were all out for only 127 after just 34 overs. And there I was last week saying what a good start to the season Hagley had made. I should mention that out of that Bewdley total of 321, their Rob Coombs made no fewer than 197 not out. In fact, Saturday was a day to forget for every one of our local sides because all three local teams in the second division of the Worcestershire County League lost as well. Belbroughton lost by 8 wickets against Breedon, Lye by the same 8-wicket margin against Enville, while Old Swinford versus Evesham, although resulting in another loss for our neighbours, must have been an entertaining match for the spectators. Evesham, the home side, batted first, and Old Swinford must have been congratulating themselves for bowling them out for a very modest total of 122 after just 34 overs. However, Old Swinford's own batting has been frail, to say the least, so far this season, and they fared even worse, succumbing for a total of only 95. 5 local clubs in action, 5 losses. Things can only get better. I think that's what Andy Murray's been saying. The newspapers have been reporting in the last few days that Andy has just celebrated his 30th birthday and have begun speculating how many more years the current world number one can enjoy at the top of his sport. According to Murray himself, the answer is several more. But the first few months of 2017 have not treated him kindly, although of course the slow clay courts favoured on the European mainland, where the main current tournaments are being played, have never greatly suited his game. Andy departed the contest in the third round of the Madrid Open last week, an event won on home soil by Rafa Nadal, who beat Djokovic in the semi-final and Dominic Thiem of Austria in the final. This week it's the Italian Open, and once that's concluded, we will be into the French Open in Paris, the second of this year's 4 Grand Slam tournaments. Nadal appears to have a new lease of life after surgery last year and will certainly be a threat in Paris. Federer has not played for weeks and had said he would return to action in the French tournament, but has now changed his mind and will next appear at Wimbledon. I'd have thought it will be difficult for him to make his mark there if he's not played for a few months, so I'm sure he will be on court again before Wimbledon starts, maybe in Germany, where he usually plays in the grass court tournament at Halle. It all sounds like semi-retirement to me, but Roger says, far from it, he intends to go on playing for several years yet. We'll see. Coming back to cricket, the county sides are currently playing in the Royal London Cup tournament, which is a series of 50 overs a side matches. All the English county sides are split into 2 divisions, North and South, and I'm pleased to report that as of the beginning of this week, Worcestershire are top of the Northern Division. They beat Durham on Sunday and also won a rain-affected match against local rivals Warwickshire last week, thanks to the infamous Duckworth-Lewis method, which I have never understood. Worcestershire have so far played 7 matches in this competition, won 5 of them, lost 1, and also tied 1, an unusual result in cricket, and that was against the bottom team, Northamptonshire. Warwickshire, on the other hand, have suffered in this competition, having only won 2 matches out of 8 played and are second from bottom of the league. Starbridge Cricket Club play in the Birmingham League, where a disappointing season in 2016 led them to be relegated to Division 3, where they have made a bright start this year. Their opening matches have resulted in a win away from home against Streatley and then a 9-wicket home victory over Nuneaton, and these were followed on Saturday with their narrowest win so far, by just 2 wickets against Brood. 3 wins out of 3 has the club fighting for top spot in the division. The last knockings of the professional soccer season are upon us, with Chelsea confirmed as Premier League champions, Spurs as runner-up, with Hull City, Middlesbrough and Sunderland relegated. Newcastle and Brighton will replace 2 of these in the Premier League next season, but the playoffs to decide who the third promoted side will be have yet to take place. And there'll be an interesting new entrant in the top leagues in England next season. Following victory in their promotion playoffs, Forest Green Rovers will be joining League Two for 2017-18. They are not that far away from here, being based at Nailsworth in Gloucestershire, but their main claim to fame is that they are the greenest club in soccer. They have an artificial pitch at their ground. The power in their stadium is provided by solar energy. The food they serve in their restaurant is all vegan. And as you may suspect from all this, the man with the money behind them is an industrialist who specialises in green power. His name is Dale Vincent, and he seems an interesting character. In his youth, he was a tree-hugging vagrant, then a New Age traveller, but he must have turned a page in his life. In 1995, he formed a green energy company, Equitricity, and he is now estimated to be worth around £100 million. He has put his resources behind the club, and now they've achieved promotion to League Two. It'll be interesting to follow their progress. Sunday witnessed the first European leg of this season's Formula One season, the Spanish Grand Prix at the Catalunya circuit near Barcelona, where Lewis Hamilton showed a sparkling return to form and victory over his closest rival, Sebastian Vettel, for Ferrari. The race was nip and tuck between these two favourites from the start, when Vettel jumped Hamilton, who was in first place on the grid, until an adventurous overtaking manoeuvre by the British driver put him in the lead near the end. But the pair of them had exchanged the leadership throughout an entertaining race, and I think Lewis Hamilton should have a quiet word of thanks to his teammate in the Mercedes outfit, Valtteri Bottas, who led the race at one point after both Hamilton and Vettel had been in the pits for a tyre change. Bottas had Vettel's Ferrari on his tail just after the German driver rejoined the race, and he endeavoured to slow the pace of the race down, enabling Hamilton in third place at that time to close the gap on those ahead. Poor Bottas was not rewarded for his team spirit, as his car caught fire soon after and he had to stop and make a quick exit. In the final stages, Hamilton and Vettel had the leadership of the race all to themselves, with third-place Ricciardo in the Red Bull car more than a minute behind. That's two wins each for Vettel and Hamilton so far this season, and with the former 6 points ahead in the Drivers' Championship and Bottas third, but a long way back. Now it's on to what many regard as the most glamorous of all the Formula One fixtures, the Monte Carlo Grand Prix, over the bank holiday weekend at the end of this month. Only last week I was telling you about Charlotte Baddesley, the 14-year-old Heathfield schoolgirl from Stourbridge who had just won the English Schools Table Tennis Association Championships. Since then, she's gotten one better, or maybe I should say five better, for she won the cadet singles, doubles and team events at the Cadet and Junior National Championships, in addition a mixed doubles silver medal and a singles bronze. Charlotte won her three gold medals all on the same day, and it included winning the doubles title with Megan Gidney, who then became her opponent in the final of the singles. Good friends and doubles partners as they are, Charlotte showed no mercy in the singles final, which she won 4-love. It seems to me we shall be hearing a lot more of this young lady in the next few years. I remarked at the beginning of this week's sports news that rugby would be taking a rest for the summer, but of course this year that is hardly the case. You may, or you may not, be pleased to note that the British and Irish Lions are touring New Zealand and will fill the sporting headlines from early June until their three-test match series against the All Blacks is complete. A squad of around 40 players from the four home nations has been selected by manager Warren Gatland, himself a New Zealander, to do battle against the home nation, who are pretty much universally acknowledged to be the best in the world. The tour begins on June the 3rd with a match against a provincial New Zealand side, and there are half a dozen such matches before the first three internationals against New Zealand themselves on June the 24th, with two further test matches on each of the next two following weekends. Lions tours of New Zealand have in general been a fairly salutary lesson for this country. Only in 1971, when the Lions won two matches, lost one and drew the fourth, have we ended on top. The tour was a more leisurely affair in those days. The first match was played in late June and the fourth and final drawn game not until the middle of August. Apart from that year, we've always ended up on the losing side on each tour, and the overall record reads 38 matches played, Lions won 6, 3 have been drawn and New Zealand have won 29. I doubt the balance will change this time, but hope to be proved wrong. I will keep listeners up to date when the action starts. And still on the subject of rugby union, last weekend witnessed the final of the European Champions Cup, in which Saracens from England won a pulsating victory against the French side Clermont-Auvergne. This was played on the neutral soil of Murrayfield, where hordes of English and French supporters had gathered on Saturday and were thoroughly entertained by a match which ebbed and flowed and was only decided in the dying minutes. Saracens earned the title of European champions, the second successive season they've done so, thanks to a 28-19 victory, but after they'd established an early 12-point lead in the match, they were pegged back to a 5-point advantage by the interval. Improved their lead with a successful penalty kick, but Clermont then scored a superb try with a handling move that began in their own 22 and ended almost under the posts at the other end. Only in the dying minutes, as the French side began to tire, did Sarries pull ahead again and clinch the win. The match was a fitting climax to the club rugby season, in my opinion. And that's also the climax to my sports report this week. I'll be back next time. Until then, it's goodbye from Brian Gall.